I'm going to introduce Seb, whose dad is Patrick sitting there. And apparently, you're going to tell Dad a lot more about what he doesn't know. So, it's going to be interesting for everyone.
We'll see.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Well, morning, welcome. This is cool. I know every sort of guest speaker and preacher type person says, like, oh, it's a real pleasure to be here. But to be honest, it really is, because, like, I think I know most of you. Most of you know that I grew up in this church. This church was where I really found my faith, but it really solidified it. And, you know, I got part of a really solid youth group, and Ali Willis, Mark Sanger, these people really spoke into my life a lot. And Crusaders as well, Andy Lake. I remember sitting here, you there, talking about some solid stuff and getting really inspired about Jesus and stuff. So it's really cool to be actually on the flip side a little bit now. So I'm going to give you a bit of a step-by-step journey on what my sort of faith journey has been for a reason. And I don't know if anybody read the sort of description, but there is going to be a bit of a challenge. And it's not going to be just a sit down and listen to me type thing. So just a pre-warning for you there. But yes, before I do all of that, just want to give a bit of a intro to what I'm going to be doing this year. So I currently work at Carity Wood. How many of you been there? Nice. Almost everyone. Yeah, cause do you guys still go there? Or have you?
Yeah.
Yeah, sweet.
Oh, not the men, I don't think.
Yeah, fair.
What's that?
A
bit soft.
Bunk beds are too hard. So I work there now, but I've quit that job. I'm finishing that in September, and I'm going to be moving out to New Zealand to start two different charities. One, Soul Edge, which is currently already running. It's been going in Canada for 13 years. Anybody know it? Or is it just through me? Yeah. So Soul Edge is basically a 5-month discipleship adventure program where we take up to 10, 12 students. It's a very small thing. We take a small cluster of people, take them away for 5 months out of their comfort zone, and basically try and encourage and challenge and push them to become what I kind of like to call a hardcore Christian. Because, not just because we need Christians with big muscles or whatever, you don't, but you do need Christians that are full of boldness and courage and ready to bring the kingdom of God onto earth. And to be honest, with a lot of places that I've been, that is kind of what this particularly Western world is lacking a little bit. It's lacking Christians that are really willing to put their faith where their action where their faith is and stuff like that. So that's what we kind of do. We do 3 months of teaching, training, discipleship. So that's daily worship, daily teaching, regular one-to-one mentoring. And then we do 2 months of mission as well. So we take our students into the heart of mission. So we do a couple of teaching sessions on it, but then really we take them for 2 months into the zone and teach them how to do mission. And really what we're trying to do is not teach them how to do like a third world type mission trip where you build a house or build a school or something like that, but we teach them how do you actually come alongside people as maybe a spiritual father or a spiritual mother or a mentor. Or basically, how do you do discipleship? Because, I mean, even scripture says, you may have 10,000 teachers around you, but you don't have many fathers. You don't have many people that are willing to actually come alongside someone's faith journey and be like, what's your questions? What are you talking about? Oh, I saw you did that. Actually, that's not really that cool. I challenge you out of that kind of environment. So that's what we do. So our key sort of rule for where we go and do mission is that they have to speak English. So we want to teach our students how do you come alongside people as a spiritual mother or a spiritual father. So that's in a nutshell, that's Soul Edge. And I'm going to show you a little video about what it is. So let's see if this works.
Appear in that?
No, I wasn't actually on that year. That was 2016. So I led it for 3 years, 2013 to 2015, and did it myself as my own gap year, 2010. But no, wasn't in that, unfortunately. But yeah, so Soul Edge has three three kind of core values: adventure, discipleship, and mission. And when I personally did the gap year course, I had my mindset on going to university, and I was like, I don't want to do the standard kind of gap year thing where you go to Kenya and build a house and and you know, be a Christian that way. So like, I don't want to do that, so I'm just going to go to uni. But then Soul Survivor showed one of these videos on their stage of like all the adventure stuff, and I was hooked. I was like, sure, I'm going to do this adventure. Jesus on the side, great. But what I've come to realise now is that actually the adventure side of it is so crucially important, because through discipleship and mission, without the adventure element, without that call to something that's potentially a little bit dangerous, we kind of miss a huge part of faith. And I think we miss a huge part of faith in our Western environments, because there's not a lot of danger. There is danger in our faith, but not a lot. And if you read scripture, Jesus is constantly calling his disciples and calling people that follow him into difficult, tough situations. So what we try and attempt to do on there is to take people out of their comfort zone, you know, whether it's like sub-zero temperatures. I think the lowest we got to is minus 50 degrees Celsius. So it's seriously cold. Whether it's physical comfort zones or whether it's spiritual, physical comfort zones, like, hey, go and do some street evangelism to this gang over there that it's not too dangerous, don't worry. But yeah, that's what we're vitally called to is a life of boldness. Jesus calls us to it. So it looks a lot of fun, and it definitely is. You probably saw the bit where they're on the skidoo going across the frozen lake, and with some kids like jumping on people's backs and stuff. That was the Canadian mission zone. So we go to the First Nations people of Canada, and it's one of the remotest places that I've ever been. It's 10 hours north, and that's not even north of like the border, and that's not even, I tell people it's northern Canada, but it's actually not even halfway up. It's
10 hours north of where?
Of the border of Canada and America. And that's still not even halfway up the country. But it's 4 hours, this particular place we go to, which is called Pelican Narrows, is 4 hours away from the nearest supermarket and city and anywhere. So it's seriously remote. We lived in a log cabin that had no running water, no heating or anything. So we had to go down to the lake, get buckets of water for 10 people, so showers, food, drinking water, washing up water, everything. We had to dig our own toilet out the back, real big hole, put a little porta cabin type thing on it, go chop our wood down, our trees down for heating. So it sounds great, but obviously at times it was, for a lot of these guys, it was a real challenge. And that was one of my favourite things to lead people in, because it was, okay, we are here on mission. Yes, there's bald eagles flying around and bears and wolves, and it's a really beautiful, pretty place, but you can't really wash yourself very well. We actually, one year, got a bit of a reputation for being a stinky year, which wasn't great. changed that. But yeah, there was no Wi-Fi, there was no internet, you couldn't charge your phone. You'd go to bed really hot because you'd stoked the fire up really big, and then you wake up freezing because the fire's obviously gone out and no one's bold enough to unzip their sleeping bag and feed the fire. So it was a tough environment, and it was perfect for what we wanted to teach Christians. They're going to come back and they're going to be thrown into workplaces, university, maybe family situations that are difficult and tough, and environments that need your faith to be unrockable, unshakable, and tough. And you've got to be willing to give or to live a life of service and sacrifice rather than serving yourself. So that's what that is. That's what we do. I'm going to be moving to New Zealand this year to start up Soul Edge New Zealand. So we'll have a winter course and a summer course, which will be pretty cool. But the other thing that I'm going off to do is, so I'm starting that charity, but I'm also going to be starting another charity called 4M, which stands for the Fourth Musketeer, starting in Holland. Sounds a bit lame. But
Musketeer.
I think it sounds good over there, apparently. But the subsection of it is called an XCC, which is an Extreme Character Challenge, which I think sounds a bit better. And what we do, basically, has anybody heard of it? Come across that? That's incredible. I would recommend that for anyone, because this is sort of for younger people, but the XCC is for any man that if your job is an office job and you never get out and do any exercise, doesn't matter, it's still for you. Basically, we take 100 men at one time into the mountains and tell them absolutely nothing about what's to come. So men, typically, we like control, we like to know what's going on. Pretty much almost everyone here is wearing a watch, we like to know the time. You turn up, you've been given a kit list, you're not allowed to bring anything more, anything less. If you turn up with extra stuff, they literally take your bag apart and throw the things away that you're not allowed to bring. They take your watch, they take your phone, they take your camera, they give you a little bag of rations, and they say, let's go into the mountains. People are like, oh, how long are we going to be? When's going to be the camp spot? Are we camping up there? And you're only ever told, you'll see. There's no information, and it's tough. And basically, you have 72 hours of challenge, and you have no idea what it's going to be. And I'm not going to tell you what it is, because who knows, one of you might do it. I definitely will recommend it. But you're challenged in the physical, and again, that physical, but then representing the spiritual kind of challenges and the character challenges that we face. Like, what is it? I'm not a father. I know a lot of you guys are. A lot of you guys are husbands as well. The challenges of being a husband, the challenges of being a father, the challenges of being just a member of a church, the challenges of being in the workplace, what are they and how are you actually facing them? That's what this does. So let me give you a little video of that one as well.
President JFK once said, we stand at the edge of a new frontier. So if you're like me, you're just an ordinary person wanting to live an extraordinary life, then I encourage you, sign up and join.
So, a little plug for that. If you don't have to be, as I said, you don't have to be a mountaineer, you don't have to be an outdoors expert, but this is one of the most incredible, the XCC is one of the most incredible ministries I've ever seen for men. So it's catered for what they sort of, you can apply and do like a Christian one or a non-Christian one. So they basically trick non-Christians into coming onto it by saying, look into it as a non-Christian. It's pretty good because they tailor it slightly, but everyone is all together. So all the Christians and the non-Christians are together. But you get split into a bunch of different groups and the non-Christians will be together. So when the specifically Christian stuff happens, they can sort of opt out of it. But they always have the choice of opting in. So basically what happens is a bunch of non-Christians come thinking they're just going to have like a jolly in the mountains. One guy brought a cheese board with a bunch of cheese and wine glasses, thinking it was going to go for a men's jolly at a picnic. But they bring them along with you, and then they give them an option like, right, this bit is specifically heavily Christian. Do you want to do it or not? And basically, every single year, they all say yes, because they've got this huge camaraderie feel of like, I'm with this 100 other men in the mountains, like, and we've been with you this far, we're not jumping ship now. And they come, and you saw that the cross on the mountain, there's this cross moment, and the number of people that come to Christ. I did it just last month, and there was this father and two sons that were, you know, they were in gangs, and they were dropping out of school, and they were, you know, he's got scars all over him and everything. All three of them, the father and the two sons, none of them were Christian. But the father had just started coming to church, like literally a few weeks, and they got dragged along to this. And so the father was like, well, I'll bring my sons. They had no idea it was even a Christian thing at all. But all of them came to Christ right there and then. And the amazing thing is that often you can think like, oh, it's quite hyped up, it's on the mountain, you know, we're all together, we're away from the real world. But I keep in contact with a lot of these men, and a lot of the men keep coming back and back and back to help, like volunteer on it, and their lives are changed. The number of wives that kick their husbands to go on this thing because they're like, I've seen how this guy's come back changed, and you husband, you go and do it. It changes lives. So if you've got someone in mind, you're thinking, actually, I'd really love my mate to come to know Jesus, but they don't ever want to come to church, think about inviting them to this. I give you my mate from school, a guy called Filler. I don't know if I'm allowed to swear here, but Probably not. But I asked him once, hey, do you want to, I'm going up to this like a big like festival, well not festival, this big event thing in London. It's a church thing. Do you want to come? I explained it. And he goes, sounds as boring as, mate. I was like, oh, okay, blunt, fair enough. I invited him to this, and he was like, oh, yeah, actually, it looks all right. And he might be coming. So it's just got that, it gets him in. But yes, that's what I'm doing. Basically, that 4M XCC, that's in 13 different countries, and now I'm going to be franchising it out in New Zealand. So for the latter half of my year, I'm going to be like pushing the XCC, and then from January to May, I'm going to be pushing Soul Edge. So moving into full-time ministry, none of those things are paid positions at the moment, so I'm needing to raise my own support and salary. So yeah, if anybody would want to see this kind of stuff happen, and you'd want to support me and be involved in that, then please do come and talk to me afterwards. And need the support, can't do it without the backing of the church, and would love you to join with me in that. So that's what I'm doing. What now? I want to talk to you. It's not just about me. I want to give a bit of a session for you guys. So I want to give you basically my story. My story, which has got some good stuff and it's got some bad stuff. As you know, grew up with mum and dad, Patrick and Sue, great Christian family, had a great solid foundation there. Then I came to St. Paul's, came to Crusaders, had all of these incredible leaders around me that massively inspired my faith. And particularly with Crusaders, there was a lot of godly men that, you know, Andy, Will Leonard, Alex Tate, Matt Sawyer, all of these men that were young, but passionate for Jesus and adventurous and a bit wacky and just good. And they were like these incredible role models for me. And I came to St. Paul's and I just popped into the back to see the lack of pews and the chairs there. It looks pretty cool. And I saw the baptism pool. And I remembered I got baptized in there. And I remember standing up in front of the whole church, giving my testimony and saying, since coming to church, since being involved in this family, my life is basically just Jesus, which is incredible for me. So there was THG on a Tuesday home group at Ali's house. There was Quest, which is like a youth alpha on a Thursday. There was Friday youth push night. There was Sunday Crusaders and Sunday push. And then there was countless Christian social things happening throughout the week. Basically, my life was just Jesus. And I had Mark Sanger, all of these different older men that were investing into me as a Christian. It was like the best foundation you could ever have. And then did that. Does anybody know? Anybody remember Josh Picker? Mm. Josh was this Canadian guy that Bimby brought over, and he was just like this nuts evangelist that basically all he ever did was just stop people on the street and just say, oh, you're in a wheelchair, let me pray for you. Oh, you've got a broken arm, let me pray for you. Oh, you've got this incredible sickness, let me pray for you. And he would see tons of miracles. He even came into Derek Wood's school when I was in sixth form, and went around to different classes and lunchtime stuff and was praying for people. People were like falling over laughing in the spirit, and literally there was one girl that was in the middle of the corridor and she was just hysterically laughing, and I was really embarrassed because teachers and people were literally having to like step over her to get through, and I'm like, this is not what I thought. I brought you into the church, the school. But he was an incredible guy. And he invited me out to go and intern with him for 3 months out in Canada. So I went and did that. And basically just lived with the guy and just spent every moment with him and saw how he ran a church, how he stepped out and was bold in his faith, how we saw miracles and healings, and we saw churches grow and people discipled, and it was incredible. And I got to be a part of that. And then after those 3 months, I went and did my gap year with Soul Edge. So moved sort of west of Canada, spent 3 months doing discipleship and stuff there with 11 other guys, so it was purely a guy course that time, 11 other guys with me, all growing together, and there was two guy leaders, Josh and Joel, a pair of twins, and their sole job was to invest into me as a Christian, to teach me, to disciple me, to invest into me, that was their sole job. And then we went to Kenya and did 2 months of mission there, and again, their sole job was to just cultivate me and my faith. Incredibly privileged. Then, after my gap year, came home, moved to Scotland with Rock UK, which is the same company that owns Carroty Wood. Went up there, 2 years there, and again, Christian environment. I had Christian leaders, Christian male role models around me. 2 years living in an environment with purely Christians, all focused on the same thing. The centre director, a guy called Lee Musson, who's particularly excited about discipleship and not just running a business and running an outdoor centre, but actually investing into the staff. So there was countless after work Bible studies, and I could always go into his office and just talk in the middle of the day about what's going on, and it was always there. So I had 2 years of that. Then I went back out to Soul Edge, back out to Canada, ran that for 3 years, and now I've been back here for 4 years working at Carroty Wood. So my whole life, I've had a few different spells of being in the non-Christian environment. Like, I worked for World Challenge, which is a non-Christian expedition company. Worked at Costa Coffee for a long time. So I've had a small share of being out of the Christian bubble. But most of the time, I've just been incredibly privileged to go from positive Christian environment to positive Christian environment. So what am I saying with that? What I'm saying is, even though I've had that kind of upbringing and that kind of lifestyle, I was still able to pick up what I call a man wound. Still able to pick up a man wound. And I want you guys to, as I'm talking, I want you to think about what potentially is your man wound. Because I believe every single person, every single man, gets a man wound. Every one of us. You can't escape it, because the enemy's pretty good at twisting good situations. Twisted the Garden of Eden into a bad sinful place. So you can definitely twist your nice little life into a difficult one. Did for mine. But I want to know, is your man wound, is it a wound or is it a scar? Because the two are very different things. I'm going to explain what the difference is later. But my wound came about because even though I was in those positive environments with a lot of really strong male role models, there was one fatal flaw that every single one of those guys had. One particular thing, and it was just that they were mere men. They were men. They were human. They had all the good intention in the world. They had all the godly attitudes and desires. But they were men. And they let people down. They let me down. I don't hold them to account for that, because they are merely men. In the moment, I did hold them to account. But they wounded me. And I now know that I've wounded people big time. I know there's people out there that are really hurt because of what I've said. Some words that I've said that I can't take back. Some actions that I did, or some actions that I didn't do, that I now can't take back. No matter how much I apologise, I've wounded people. And I know you guys have been wounded as well. You may have already gone through a healing journey of that, but you have been, I am assuming that you have been wounded at some point. So I want to give you a few examples of actually how that happened. So I said that St. Paul's was a really positive environment for me. I wouldn't be the Christian I am today if it wasn't for St. Paul's. But there were a few guys that I felt let me down. Clearly not going to name them. They're not in the room, don't worry. You might know them, but there was a particular time, quite a long period of time, where I was going through some real struggles in faith. Real struggles with doubt, real struggles with like this whole, you know, man problems with lust and stuff like that. I was like, this is tearing me apart. I don't know what to do with it. I had this real tough time because everyone seemed to be so excited about the cross. Yeah, it's a pretty big thing. The cross, Jesus died on it. You know, we all celebrate that and love that. But I was at this point in my life where I really did not get the cross, because I had this thing in my head where I was like, look, I didn't choose to be created. I came into earth. I didn't say, hey, make me. And you made me, God, and you made me someone that was definitely going to sin. Sure, I chose to sin, but there's not been one human that has never sinned. So I'm definitely going to sin. So then for you to come and say, don't worry, I'm the saving grace, and I'm going to like pull you out like of your sin that you've done, because you're so evil, so now everyone worship me. I didn't get that. Because I was like, you made me. You kind of have a duty to save me, because I didn't choose to be here. That was what my thinking was. And it seemed like no one could give me an answer to that, explain it to me. And I remember at the same time as that, I had this real difficult relationship with a certain person that was tearing me apart, and it was real it was a real problem in my life. So I had these two things, this bad relationship and this real doubt in God and this struggle with who he was. And I went to two different men at two different occasions and I shared that and I was genuine. I was like pouring my heart out. And what they both did on two separate occasions, they both listened, they both prayed, and then they both forgot. They never again asked me, how are you doing with that? You know that relationship that you were struggling with? What's the 411? Fill me in, what's going on? They never again asked me, how are you doing with doubt? How are you doing with that faith stuff? Have you found any more answers for that? I was reading this like, article, maybe you should read it. Like, not, they literally just seemed like they forgot. I don't know if they were just being cowardly and thought, I don't know how to deal with this, so I'm just not going to bring it up. I don't know if they were just being British and thought, well, if he wants to talk, he'll come to me, which is what we all seem to do in Britain. My door's always open. He can come to me if he wants. I don't know if they were just doing that, or I don't know if they just forgot. But that was the first, that sort of stuff that was happening was the first time this wound started to happen in me. Then, as I said, went to Canada with Josh Picker. Incredible guy, learned a lot from him, spent my every waking moment with this guy. But we never spoke. We never ever spoke. We would be in the car together and he would only ever be thinking about, should I get out? And he would just get out of the car, leave the engine running. I'd be like, Josh, is it okay? He'd just get out, leave the car running and go and start evangelizing to this person. Amazing. He'd see some sort of healing. This person would start coming to church. It was a good thing. But I was in the car and we'd never spoke. We didn't talk. We'd share an office together and he'd just be thinking about what he's going to be, where he's going to be going. Is he going to go to this school to evangelize? Is he going to preach here? So I even said to him once, like, hey Josh, can we just like chat? I feel like we're not really talking much. And he said, oh yeah man, like if you ever want to talk, just let me know and I can book you in. I can get my calendar out and book you in. That's not what I meant. I'm living with you, man. Can we just chat? He just didn't get it. So, although he didn't mean anything by that, that was just his character, was just focused on other things, that started to add to this wound that started to grow in me, that actually was saying, Seb, people don't really want to know. People don't really want to know. Maybe they wanted to know in the first place. Oh, Seb, come and do an internship. Oh, yeah. Seb, what's going on with your life? But then once they hear it, they don't really like it, it's a bit boring, you're not very interesting, nobody wants to know. That's what this lie started to develop in my brain. So I did the 3 months with Josh Picker, and then I moved to Soul Edge. Again, I've said it before, it's one of the most godly, incredible environments I've ever been in. I've always described it as the environment that looks most like the kingdom of God. Because there's daily worship, there's Bibles permanently open, there's teaching, we're constantly looking to Jesus. And yet what I started to notice was I would start to speak, I'd put my opinion out there, I'd ask people questions to my brothers, and it just seemed like people didn't respond, they just didn't answer. And I was trying to figure out, is it just me in my head? Am I not being loud enough? People don't understand what I'm saying? And I went through all of this stuff, and then one time it got really obvious. I can't remember what I said, but I said something, and just to all 11 other brothers, and I said something, and it was a question, and nobody responded. It was quite normal, actually, at that point. So I said, guys, put your hand up if you heard what I said and you just decided to say nothing. I shouted it at them, and they all put their hand up. I was like, man, what is it? What is it about me that people just don't want to listen? People don't want to know? So I brought it to my leader, Joel. I said, Joel, explain the whole situation. I feel like people aren't really listening when I speak. And he said, oh yeah, well maybe you should just stop saying stupid things. And that was it. That was the advice. That was the discipleship. That was the mentoring. I was tried to take it on the chin, but I was like, ouch. That really hurt. So maybe the reason people aren't listening to me is because I'm saying stupid stuff. But I didn't know I was saying stupid stuff. I thought I was saying normal stuff. So what am I supposed to say if what is on my heart is actually just coming across as stupid? I'm at a loss. So although it was the most incredible environment for me, it actually was really damaging because of certain few things. Then came back, went to Wittoff Park up in Scotland, the outdoors adventure centre like Carrotty Wood. Again, incredible environment. But I was getting used to this kind of people ignoring me, people not listening to me, people not really wanted to know what was going on with me. So I was starting, this wound was getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and every time I stepped out to someone to sort of get to know me a little bit, and they rejected me, it hurt. It really hurt, and every time the wound got bigger and bigger. But then in church we would talk, well, there was the other church leader actually that I, again, was going through some real struggles with, and I told him, shared my heart with him. He'd asked people, you know, if you ever want to talk, come to me. I said, okay, you said it, so I'm going to do it. This isn't normal for me anymore. I don't really like sharing that much, but I'm going to do it. Did it. Shared my struggles. Shared the problems. He listened. He prayed. And he forgot. Never followed up with me. And that really hurt. And then I asked my Lee Musson, who was the centre director of the outdoor centre. Yeah, he was also, you know, very involved in discipleship and stuff. And I said to him, you know, it was really difficult for me, but I asked him, would you be my spiritual father? Would you be my mentor? Someone that's going to know what's going on. And that was like the hardest thing that I've ever had to do, I remember, because I'm coming from this place of nobody wants to know, Zeb. Nobody wants to know who you are. But will you ask someone to take time out of their own busy life, their own busy schedule? You know, he's helping run the church, he's running the outdoor centre, he's got a wife, he's doing all of this different stuff, and you want to ask that guy to take time out of his own day, his own time, his personal time, on top of all the extra stuff that he's doing, and you want him to talk about you? That was like this huge foreign concept for me. But I was like, this guy has talked about discipleship and mentoring, and that we need to be accountable to each other. So I'm going to pluck up the courage. I'm going to ask him. So I asked him, and he said, yeah man, absolutely, but just so you know how this is going to work, if you ever want to talk, you need to come to me. And I was like, I said out loud, I was like, of course, absolutely, that's what I thought this was going to be like. Obviously in my head I was like, this is the end, it's the end of this relationship, because there's no way I can do this every time. There's no way I can force myself to come to you every time and say, stop what you're doing and talk about me. It was just, nah, not going to happen. So we never spoke. He said, yes, he'd be my mentor, but he never, what I wanted was him to show an interest and to chase me a little bit. Never did. So that was the end of that relationship. It was just another deepening moment of that wound. And this was going on and on. Every new place I went to, this the same thing happened. Men were letting me down. They didn't show an interest. They didn't want to know. They were too involved in themselves. Has anybody read the book How to Win Friends and Influence People? It's a good book, right? I really like it. There's a lot of Jesus in that book. There's a lot of godly principles. But one of the main principles that he focuses on, basically, is how do you be a really good, like, how do you lead people really well? And basically, what he says is, people are interested in themselves. So if you want to be a really good conversationalist, what do? Talk about that person. Talk about the other person. Ask them questions. Get to know them. Get really good at asking questions about them. And then people will think you're a really good conversationalist. There's one particular story, wasn't there, about like the guy that was, what, selling yachts or something? I don't know. But that's the concept that they focus on. And that said to me, it's like, okay, yeah, that is true. In people's hearts, people are really, they're not interested about me. They're interested about them. That's what innately we're about. And that is true. And we need to fight that. We need to fight that. But that's true. So I was just like, you know, I've got to this point now. I'm like, nobody cares about me. People just care about themselves. So I'll just talk about them. And I got actually really good at that, which is what I believe actually made me quite good at the job of like mentoring and discipling people. Because I knew that people wanted to be asked. So I just asked them. I pushed past this like awkward moment of, like, is that a too touchy subject? Should we talk about that? I don't know if they're going to want to open up about that. I just threw that out the window, and I was like, I would just ask people straight, how is this? How are you doing with that? How are you doing with lust? How are you doing with sleeping with your girlfriend? Is that still happening? And just ask questions, and it works as a discipleship method. But I knew nobody wanted to know about me. So what I did was I put up barriers, and we all put up barriers. And it's really important to identify what those barriers are. And mine was a very particular rule. I set this rule up in place. You know, I had a conversation with Seb. And I was like, right, what are we going to do about this? Because I'm tired of this rejection. That's ultimately what it is, isn't it? I'm saying, hey, do you want to know me and this person? What I'm hearing them say is, nah, don't want to know. you're a bit boring, you're not very interested, what you say is stupid, it's not really worth knowing. That's what I was hearing. So it was rejection, and that hurt too much, and I was like, I'm done with that. So I'm gonna distance myself from people. And what I'm gonna do is, I've got this rule of three. If people want to know what's going on with Seb in my mind or in my heart, they've got to ask me three times what's going on. Three times. If they ask me once, I know they're just being polite. If they ask me twice, they've run out of conversation topics. If they ask me three times, they actually want to know. So, and it would have to be like the same question. How are you doing with this? How are you doing with this? How are you doing with this? And it had to be in the same space. It wasn't like over a week. It was like the same conversation. So, needless to say, nobody asked three times. Who asked three times? So basically, I gave this impression that I was actually a really good conversationalist because I was good at talking, I was quite loud, I was quite laughy, I would make lots of jokes, I was quite happy. People thought it was all fine, but I never really, I'm sure there was the odd time where I did, but I never really shared what was really going on in me. And then I noticed the effect that this had on me was that I didn't become this person that had a lot to say but didn't know how to say it, or had a lot going on but didn't have the right environment to share it with. That wasn't who I was. What I was actually a person that had nothing going on anymore. Became empty, became hollow and shallow. So that when, I remember particular times where Dad and Mum, some people, obviously I was living all over the place, so we weren't living close and they didn't. But when they did ask, and I knew, I could tell that they really did want to know, I actually didn't know what to say. I had nothing to share. And I know family would get a bit frustrated with that because they're like, what? Like, Seb, just tell us what's going on. And Adam and Chesky, my brother and sister, they'd talk all day long about this and that. But I just had nothing to say. And I remember getting really scared by that because I was like, is there anything going on in there? And it's like my body had said, bro, if you're not gonna share, if you're not gonna be part of community, if you're not gonna be a part of relationship with people and share what's going on, we're just not gonna think it. We're not gonna feel it anymore because it's kind of pointless. That's what was going on. Only when I started to read this, same Evan Saints Bible, only when I started to read this and really, really read it, you know, take it on board and actually look at what it said and see that my life was different from that, because this is constantly talking about relationship, it's constantly talking about community and talking and being, you know, talking about identity and stuff. And I was realizing that the Bible was a very different picture from what my life looked like. I was loving, I was kind, I was doing good things, I was being a good Christian, but I wasn't, my heart wasn't what the Bible talked about. Because I saw even in Genesis 1 when it talks about, or in Genesis, where it talks about the creation, it was like, he made me. He made me. And if he made me, then I must be, surely I must be a little bit more interesting than what I'm thinking. Surely I'm not just stupid. Surely I'm not just, you know, someone that people don't want to listen to. Surely I've got some interest. Because I'm pretty sure that if God makes stuff, he doesn't make it lame. He doesn't make junk. He makes stuff with a purpose. So that started to trigger me. And then I started to get some scripture up here.
My lips just switched off, isn't it?
I saw in 2 Corinthians 6 where it talks about, it's an incredible passage. It's talking about the Holy Spirit dwelling in us. So you've got this idea of the tabernacle in the Old Testament. You know, the tabernacle literally means like dwell with. So God's like, I'm going to dwell with my people, and I've got a camp with all of the Israelites all around, and the tabernacle, the tent, is going to go slap bang in the middle. I want to be amongst my people. And then the tabernacle upgrades to a temple, the most glorious temple that anyone has ever seen. People are coming from all over the place. They're like, this place is wonderful. The tabernacle is wonderful. You know, if you ever read, where is it in Leviticus or something, where it's like, yes, 50 million gold rings, purple linen from here. It's like, boring. But what they're trying to get across is that this tent was like, if it's going to house God, it's got to be incredible. And then they upgrade to the temple, and David can't even do it because he's like, oh, I've killed too many people. God's like, don't want you to build my temple. My temple's got to be perfect and holy. And the plans went on for like a million years trying to build this thing. And they build it and people are travelling from all over the place. Queen of Sheba's like, this is the best place I've ever seen in my life. This temple was amazing. And then New Testament comes along and Jesus is like, here's the new temple. Seb, it's you. You're the one that's now going to house the Holy Spirit. You're going to be the dwelling place. Your body is now the temple for me. I'm going to come into you. I was like, man, if that's what I am, then I've got to be worth sharing. I've got to be worth people knowing. Surely. And then there's this whole concept of adoption. Adoption means, obviously, someone that is not yours, a child that is not yours, and you want them so much that you're willing to go to great lengths to bring them into your family. And the Bible is a lot on adoption. Ephesians 1 particularly talks about adoption. And what it means is that he knows exactly who I am, and yet he still fights for me. He still really wants me. He still chases me and fights for me. I was like, man, if I'm worth being chased for and fought for like that, then sure, I know I'm a sinner, I know I haven't earned any of this, but you, God, see something of value and worth in me. Incredible. And then, obviously, we see what lengths he goes to bring me into his family, is he died on the cross. And then that question that I was really struggling with before, you know, what's so special about the cross, now kind of getting it a little bit more. He would go to that extreme to bring me into his family so that I could look like him, so that I could be the tabernacle, I could be the temple, I could be in relationship with him, and he could start actually healing some of my wounds. So it was only when I started to really look at the Bible and say, does my life look like this? And that's a challenge in itself. When we read the Bible, do we just do our daily Bible reading, or do we look at it and go, does my life look like this? Because I saw it and I was like, mine doesn't. And then from there, a bunch of different stuff happens, but he turned that wound into a scar. Now the difference between a wound and a scar is a wound is current. It's raw. If you flick it, it hurts. You gotta protect it. You gotta do things to make sure nothing gets in, no dirt gets in. But a scar, if you flick it, it's just nothing. It doesn't hurt. It's not raw anymore. It's healed. But it is still there. So for me, my story is that past stuff that's all gone on, that is a scar. That's in the past. It hasn't healed because of time. Time doesn't really heal. Time just buries a lot of the time. Things have got to be dealt with. God dealt with my stuff and turned my wound into a scar. I can still remember those things. I can still remember those scenes where people hurt me. But it's now just a scar. So I wonder if, as we've been talking, if you've been thinking about, or if God has hopefully dropped into your mind some wounds that you might have picked up along the way. I don't know if you've just buried them. I don't know if they've actually turned into a scar. Hopefully they have. I'm sure a lot of us have some wounds that are still raw and some that have turned into scars and part of our story. But, yeah, I wonder what yours is. I think men, particularly, are good at not being vulnerable, not showing who we really are. Sometimes we want to portray a certain picture because that's what we know people want to see. I know I was very afraid of rejection. I was very afraid. I was learning that people wanted to see a certain type of thing. So I'd tell people that. I'd try and be that person. I wouldn't show them who I really was. Put that front up, that barrier up. Are you ever doing that? Are you ever being someone that you think, this isn't exactly who I am, but it's just what I know people want to see? It might give me status, people might think better of me if I do this. You're hiding behind something. We don't really like being vulnerable. Have a little think about that. How afraid are you of rejection? How afraid are you of people knowing who you really are? That's one thing I want you to think about. Second thing I want you to think about is, are you someone that wounds people? The answer is yes. The answer is yes. But let's think a little bit more specifically. Who are the people that are in your life that look to you? Maybe someone is reaching out to you. It might not be your child, might not be your wife, but it might be. Wife, parents, children, people want a bit of you. How are you dealing with them? How are you responding to them? You don't just have to be a biological father to be a father. The Bible talks a lot about, you know, you may have 10,000 teachers, but you don't have many fathers. Are you fathering someone? Is there someone in this church, St. Paul's, who you want to come alongside and be like, I want to know your story, and when you tell me something, I'm going to remember it. You may have to write it down. I have to write it down. You have to write, I mean, I'm not going to remember it. I have to write it down. But are you, who is it in this church or in another circle that you could come alongside? Doesn't have to be, you know, every Thursday we're going to meet up. They might not even know that you'll come alongside them. It might not be, hey, do you want to be my spiritual son or daughter? You could just be, I think you need a bit of me investing into you. And that's not you saying, yes, I have studied the scriptures for many a year now and I know all the answers, so I shall be your spiritual mentor. No, you just have to be someone that takes an interest, cares, listens, follows up with, maybe asks that un-British question, how are you doing with that? Oh, it's a bit real, isn't it? So what's your wound? What's it going to take for you to make it a scar? How do you have to go to Jesus about it? Are you going to Jesus about it? And are you wounding people and how? So this is my two questions to you. And we're actually going to break off into groups and you're going to chat about that. If you, sometime, you know, you may not know it right here and now, but we're going to do it. You're going to do it. I challenge you and encourage you, be real, be vulnerable. There's no point. If you know something, if you've got something to share, share it. Don't bother trying to think, oh, this is a bit personal, this is a bit real. If you guys can't be brothers together in the church, the men of this church, the band of brothers, if you can't share what's going on, then something's got to shift in that. Someone's got to lead the way. So someone, lead. What's your scar? Or who are you wounding? Those are the two questions. So groups of four. Let's do that.
Before we do this,
yes.
The people who've been on your trips with you, are you now mentoring them? How many are you doing it with? What questions are you asking?
I'm not mentoring them all because there's over 100. But we are doing what we call Soul Edge Plus. So that is everyone that has done Soul Edge. We're trying to serve them, bringing them back together to give more teaching, more training, and giving them some material for this and that. But they know they can always come and talk to me. But the people that I mentor,
you're switching it around. You're saying now they can always come to us.
Yeah.
But you said they didn't do that with you.
No, I've said to them. So what I do when I finish the course is I Skype them in the first week of them going back into the real world. I Skype them in the first month. And then I would one more time before the year is out. So we finish in May. And I'd Skype them 3 times. And then the onus is on them to come to me. Because I can't schedule into my life 100 people. To mentor, that's not how it's going to work. But the people that I do chase are the people at Charity Wood. So I'm the manager of all the instructors at Charity Wood. So that's 13 people. And I do put aside time regularly. I've got a rota where I meet with them one-on-one and I do ask them the tough questions and do ask them what's going on. So I'm definitely chasing some people, but not every single person that I've got into a relationship with.
What
questions
are
asked?
Questions?
Well,
because Jesus gave a lot of teaching.
Mm.
Now, maybe he said this, but we don't read it. Did he ask his disciples, "How's your sex life going?" Is that what you ask?
Yeah, sometimes. With guys, I definitely ask, like, "Hey, how are you doing with the area of lust, masturbation?" porn, definitely talk about that stuff. If they're in a relationship, I ask, like, do you guys have boundaries? Do you guys, have you guys already chatted about, like, what you want to do? Are you thinking about, like, what happens if you, what environment are you putting yourself in terms of, like, do you meet in the room on your own, or do you meet late at night, or are you always in public spaces? Yeah, I ask those questions. But with every single person is different. I was meeting with Abby yesterday or 2 days ago, and she's going through mental health stuff. So she's gone home to see her parents now, and she's really scared about it. So I'm asking, like, why? Or she's saying she feels really lonely at Character Wood, and she feels like no one wants to hear what's going on. Very similar story to myself. And I'm saying, well, do you share what's going on with yourself to them? She's like, nah, I don't. No one asks. I'm like, okay, if they ask, would you share? No, probably not. So then we challenge that. So it's incredibly personal to each different person. There's not... I mean, if I was to start with someone brand new, what I would say is, just what's your story? What's your journey to Jesus? Where you're at with Jesus right now? Is there anything on your mind, particularly with Jesus? What's your regular time with Jesus like? A few standards, but yeah, that is worth saying. It is learning to dig into people. It's definitely a skill, but it's one that you have to learn, like every single skill. Some people are more naturally better at it than others, but it's a skill, and you've got to learn how to ask questions when someone isn't talking, when isn't giving you anything. So whatever they do give you, you know, if they give you one sentence, there's probably like two or three questions that you could ask on top of that. It might seem like they're nothing, but you're sort of keeping the conversation going until something comes up that you can say, oh, why do you feel like you don't want to share with people? Why do you think you feel lonely? Or you could just throw a random one out. Hey, have you ever struggled with loneliness? Have you ever struggled with depression? Who's the person that you really share your what's going on with your heart and your mind with? Get some bank questions. Also think about, what would you want to be asked? Just do it. If there's nothing on your mind, fine. You can just talk about what I've talked about. But yeah, have a think. So... jump into groups of four. Nice stalling. I don't know what the current culture is of St. Paul's men. Hopefully you do. But... the world definitely doesn't need any more Christian men that are just really good at business, or more Christian men that are really good at sport, or more Christian men that can climb mountains, or more Christian men that are tough. We don't really need that. What we need is more Christian men that are willing to be bold in being vulnerable and being fathers. That's what we need. And that's what, hopefully, you guys want St. Paul's to be. So, if that was a moment right there where you had an opportunity to share what was on your heart, to maybe even confess something, I don't know if confession is a big thing amongst St. Paul's and men. I know we do sort of a confession prayer, but actually confessing to a brother like this, I've been living like this, and that's not cool. I don't know if that's a part of your culture, but if you want it to be, then I challenge you, lead with vulnerability, share your story, share where you've been and where you're at right now, share that. That's the best way that you're going to encourage the culture to grow into something where you've got a lot of Christian men that can share what's on their heart and be real. And don't be afraid to ask tough questions, deep questions. If they don't want to answer it, they don't have to answer it. But you do need to ask it. You do need to ask it. So, yeah, be encouraged. Go and be bold Christian men. If you had that opportunity right there, but you didn't share it, then I do challenge you: be bold, grab another brother or someone else that you're close with, and just do it. Just share where you're at, share where you've been, share if you know there's something on your heart that you've kept quiet for a long time, if you believe something that about yourself that's not in scripture, share it, talk about it, be real, don't be fake. Yes, so that's all we've got to say about that. We've got like a couple of minutes. Are there any questions anybody wants to ask? Could be about anything.
I've got lots of questions. but I'm interested to know, you're going to New Zealand.
Mm.
So to do this, you're looking for people from New Zealand to join you. Are you expecting people to come from Europe, fly over? This is going to be a costly thing, isn't it?
Yes, it is. So
everybody has to pay what's
they've got to pay about £5,000. So, which is a lot for someone of this sort of age, sort of 18 to 22, 23, because they're often like got student debt or whatever, not got a lot of money. But for what it is, it's really cheap. 5 months of living, accommodation, sport, a great adventure. It's pretty good. So for that reason, to keep the cost at that level, now the leaders are paid. So, yes, I need support. Need support. Yeah. But we're looking.
And are you saying people from UK?
yeah. So actually,
I mean, if you're in New Zealand, why don't you look for people in New Zealand?
Because
Australia,
what's really well, we actually do. It's someone just applied from Australia for the course. But we do. What's really good is when you take someone out of their comfort zone. So if they come over and they've got no phone, you control the Wi-Fi there. They don't know the area, it's much better. So if someone from New Zealand wanted to do it, we'd send them to Canada. If someone from Canada wanted to do it, they come to New Zealand, which is actually happening. So we have a South African, a Canadian, and an Australian, and some English people that have applied for this New Zealand course coming up.
When did you start?
January to May. So I'm moving out in October, but the course is January to May. I think I need to be looking. It's hard to tell because I don't know all the things I'm going to have to pay for. I don't know what rent's going to be, but I'm looking to try and get about $900 a month to cover my living costs and hopefully have, you know, put a bit away for coming back, or buying flights to come home and stuff like that.
For
so $900 a month,
for me.
Just for constant, just yeah, to pay my salary basically.
Seb hasn't mentioned it, but if anybody wants to get his email address,
yes,
I've got some paper here. Mm. Write it on.
Yeah,
if you put it on the desk there.
Is there
a he's going to need a lot
yeah,
of support.
So there's
the Bernard Brothers thing with the details on things. I'm sure Steve or somebody could send that around. Or
yeah,
Neil could send that around to all of us.
Yeah, we'll do. There's a bunch of like flyers and things. Please take one, even if it just makes me feel good. See you walking out the door with one of these. That'd be good. I don't know if you're a sticker person. Got some stickers. But yes, I've been a real schoolboy and I left. I've got loads of these, which is a booklet, small booklet that tells the details and stuff and gives you some pictures. I left most of these in my car, which is at work. But I've got three. So if you think, oh, I know someone that would like it, please take this and give it to them. If they're left here, I'll be disappointed. So yeah. But yes, I can get your email and also just, or you can find our website, souledgegapyear.com. I've got a business card, whatever. Cool. Thanks, man.
Thanks. I don't know about you, but I'm challenged. I mean, you have given us a challenge. And I don't know about the rest of you, but There's lots in there for us to take away and to look at. I mean, we probably can all relate to the stories of accountability and vulnerability and showing interest in other people. And I think, we need to almost start again sometimes as a group. And maybe we need to look around this group and actually go, who can I make myself vulnerable to? Who can I be a father to in some of the people in the church, or who can father me? And I think, considering Seb's the youngest here, he's throwing down a challenge that I'll be prepared to take up in terms of just having of our lives before God. I mean, I'm challenged. And also, it'd be great if individually some of us might be able to sponsor him and support him as somebody who's grown up in this church. And I think I've loved listening to you, and I've listened to every word you said. And it's like, I mean, I've recorded it. If you don't mind, I'll put it on the church. But I think it's something that let's just go away and think about. And actually, we are crap at building relationships, that's me. It's like how vulnerable do we make ourselves to one another? And I know we can't do it to each one of them. I can't, you can't all get in here. But I've got space. To do something. I mean, do you understand what I mean? We've all got space to allow some people in and make ourselves vulnerable. So if somebody says to you on Sunday, how are you? Don't just go, yeah, fine. When you know in the real world, maybe you're not. Yeah? And if it's okay to go to other people and say, I'm not doing so good. Somebody you might trust that might hold you accountable. I said in my group, three challenges. I became a Christian through three challenges. Because at the youth group that I grew up in, I was challenged, do I want to become a Christian? I said, no. The guy came back to me the following week and said, are you going to do anything about it? Are you going to become a Christian? I said, no. The third was he came back and challenged me, and that night I became a Christian. And it's like, I'd never really realised till you said the three challenges. And I thought, well, that worked for me. So maybe there's truth in that. That actually we should be challenging people. I mean, it's so easy to be passive and just come for Sundays, but God's calling us for something bigger that's not just Sundays, that's actually a lifestyle. And it could be just calling people up and saying, how are you doing? And I'm the world's worst at catching up with people like that. But that's a challenge for me to do. But just thank you.
Thank you.
And can we just gather around and let's lay hands on Seb for what he's got in the future. Because I think God's going to really bless how you're stepping up in New Zealand. And we want to hear back.
Yes, yes. Time. Anybody, yeah, great.
Yeah.